This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. Tonight, Washington, Moscow moves toward Denmark, Truman moves toward mobilization. Paris, Europe counts noses, 16 in all, decides to resist. United Nations, old man gloom settles on the peacemakers. Pittsburgh, the miners walk out. New York, the building trades make a peace. Now a brief message from Tom Moore.
If you haven't forgotten your Shakespeare, then you haven't forgotten...
Beware the Ides of March.
Well, now, of course, that's today, the Ides of March. But we might change that warning to...
Beware the colds of March.
Yes, changeable March weather often means cold-catching weather. So if you have a cold, or if someone in your family has a cold, get some Alka-Seltzer from your druggist. Follow the Alka-Seltzer ABC Cold Comfort Treatment and see how much better you feel.
A, Alka-Seltzer.
Take Alka-Seltzer for fast relief from that ache all over feverish misery. Follow the directions on colds on the Alka-Seltzer package.
B, be wise.
Beware of drafts. Be sure to get more rest than usual.
C, comfort.
Comfort the sore throat caused by your cold. Gargle with Alka-Seltzer. Yes, friends, there it is. Alka-Seltzer's ABC Cold Comfort Treatment. So try it if you have a cold. Let it help you feel better fast. Keep your home well stocked with Alka-Seltzer. Always keep a 30 or 60 cent size package on hand. And remember, instead of one, buy two. That's the wisest thing to do. That's good advice. And if you heed it, you'll have Alka-Seltzer when you need it. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
President Truman will deliver a special brief message to Congress on Wednesday on the foreign situation. He will point toward preliminary mobilization of American resources, human and material, to resist totalitarian aggression. Here are the whys and wherefores of his momentous decision. First, the background. The United States government has definite, conclusive information that Soviet Russia has decided not to stop at the Iron Curtain, but to try to flank that imaginary dividing line between East and West in Europe. The flank maneuver is not only aimed at Italy on the south, as everyone knows, but has been expanded beyond Finland toward Denmark. Incidentally, the Swedes have taken sudden alarm, public alarm. Only a few hours ago, the Swedish defense staff made public a letter to King Gustav. It says, quote, "Evidently, the Soviet Union is very consistently working to weld together its own security system in Eastern Europe. Apparently, it does not hesitate to resort to very brusque methods in its work. Contradictions between the East and the West do not seem to diminish, but on the contrary, to be gradually aggravating. A general conflict, however, does not seem to be imminent, as the Western powers are hardly prepared, and Russia is probably still too weak," unquote. At the same time, the union elections in northern Sweden today, including the critical iron mines, in those elections, the communists were swept out of office to a man. And in Denmark, Danes have taken the alarm. They're still leaving the Soviet Danish society by the hundreds to demonstrate to Soviet Russia that Denmark is not ripe for internal conquest. In the background, too, are new pressures on Greece, particularly Turkey in a general way. Secretary of State George Marshall told the Senate today that by intimation or intimidation, fraud and terror, communist regimes have been fastened on Hungary and Czechoslovakia. Totalitarian control has been tightened in other countries of Eastern Europe, and these states have been linked in a network of alliances. Other European peoples face a similar threat of being drawn against their will into the communist orbit. And it is the boast of the totalitarians, the Secretary of State reminded the Senate, that democracies are incapable of timely and decisive action. It is against this serious background that the President will address the Congress on Wednesday. He will draw attention to the fixed American policy of giving aid and comfort to nations that resist totalitarian aggression. It will not be necessary for the President to go beyond his previous recommendations to Congress for A, universal military training for American youth, B, more aid to Greece and Turkey, and C, billions for European recovery. The objective on Wednesday will be to check this whole problem to Congress and to the nation, to note that only Congress and American public opinion, with pressure on Congress, can actually reverse the communist momentum and belie their doctrine that Europe is ripe for conquest without a struggle. All of this will add up to a demand for preliminary mobilization of American resources, economic and human, to meet whatever crisis is in store. Incidentally, to illustrate the gloves-off stage of world diplomacy, the State Department's press officer, Mike McDermott, bluntly warned the Italians today against their communists in the election next month. He said, if the communists should win, which we can't believe they will, knowing the spirit and feeling of the Italians, but if they should win, there would be no further question of assistance from the United States. In other words, American food, dollars, resources would be denied to the Italians in the event of a communist victory. In Europe tonight, the same urgency reappeared on the scene that spun the wheels of action in Washington. In France, the 16 Marshall Plan nations gathered together and counted themselves all that remains of Europe post-war. For the story, we had planned to pierce the sunspots, affecting radio transmission to Europe, and to bring you Henry Cassidy in Paris, but that is impossible. The sunspots have beat us to the draw. We have signals, however, in other manners. We have a dispatch from Paris reporting that French Foreign Minister Georges Bidault today called on 15 nations to join France in writing a charter for a permanent European organization. He made this proposal to delegates attending the opening session of Western Europe's second Marshall Plan conference. The conference also received a joint British-French suggestion that Western Germany be included in the plan. In an obvious reference to Czechoslovakia, where communists recently seized control, Bidault said, "Europe has been reduced to the 16 nations represented here." He explained that his proposed charter for a permanent European organization would consist of a multilateral treaty dovetailing the economic and social policies of the 16 Marshall Plan nations to resist aggression. Such a unified production and commercial policy should be administered, he said, by a new international executive body. The first task of that body, Bidault added, would be to cooperate with the United States in administration of the Marshall Plan. British Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin, in a formal statement, said, and this is regarded as extremely important, "Britain intends to make the necessary sacrifices for European coordination, but does not intend to sacrifice her special ties with the Empire and Dominions." The spirit of gloom enveloped the United Nations today, from office boys right up to delegations. Here is John McVain at the United Nations.
Overnight, the atmosphere at this United Nations headquarters has become heavy with gloom and apprehension about the future. The death of Jan Masaryk seems to have shaken deeply this organization where he had so many friends. Many have accepted his death as proof that Russia will never be content with compromise. What happened to Czechoslovakia has caused these UN people to lose heart in the cause they've worked for continuously, an understanding or a way of living between Russia and the United States. Delegates and secretariat people I've talked with today don't believe Russia or America want war. But they say America has never publicly declared what her vital interests are. They're not sure Russia knows. They say a Russian move into Norway, for instance, or communist control of Italy, might be considered a vital threat by our chiefs of staff at Key West. But nobody is certain, probably not even in the Kremlin. And the fear that haunts these corridors is the fear of the two greatest world powers, giants lurching through the international fog, who might blunder into each other before either realized it. Meanwhile, the UN waits as though hypnotized for Wednesday's Security Council debate on Czechoslovakia. A man named Hudek presented his credentials here today as the Gottwald government spokesman at the UN. But the anti-communist Papanek still regards himself as official Czech delegate, holds possession of the Czech UN offices. On Wednesday, they'll meet face to face. As for Palestine, three of the big four countries today asked Arabs and Jews to accept a truce. But nobody is optimist enough to believe they will. This is John McVain at the United Nations.
As usual, preliminary to crisis, some of our domestic timetables appear to be somewhat awkward. To explain, here is Paul Long, station KDKA in Pittsburgh.
Here in what we call the tri-state area, West Virginia, Ohio, and western Pennsylvania, where most of the nation's coal and steel are produced, we're getting accustomed to having springtime and the coal strike arrive simultaneously as an annual affair, just like the income tax. Nobody likes it, but there it is. The latest rundown shows over 37,000 miners out of the pits in western Pennsylvania. That's two-thirds of the total. It's 70,000 in West Virginia, a little over two-thirds. In Ohio, 8,500 are out, a little over half the UMW membership. Those figures are growing larger, and there doesn't seem to be any doubt that the walkout will be 100% effective by tomorrow night. John Bussarello, who heads District 5, the biggest of the UMW units, told me just a little while ago that the only reason all the miners haven't already quit is that they haven't had the word. By tomorrow, he says, they'll have the word. The dispute is over how to distribute a $30 million kitty that has accumulated in the pension fund since last summer. The coal operator spokesman I talked to here in Pittsburgh say they must have more time These things should be determined by long study. The miners say it's been long enough. The old-timers who need the pension need it now. Some of them are living on $30 a month, Social Security. Meanwhile, the steel companies are getting set to cut back production. They won't say when and how much, but the stockpile of coal will last less than 10 days. This is Paul Long in Pittsburgh.
There's a big building drive in New York that was to have set the national pace of housing for all Americans in the years ahead. It may yet work out. Here's W.W. Chaplin in New York.
Construction unions of the AFL began signing agreements today, which will freeze their wages, hours, and working conditions in Greater New York until July 1, 1950. The new agreements will affect 185,000 of the 200,000 construction workers in this area. Current holdouts, and it's hoped that they'll come in soon, too, are the bricklayers, electricians, and plumbers of the Bronx and Manhattan. Here's the way it will work. The construction men agree to work for 30 months under current conditions without raising the wage question. And then there may be a readjustment on the basis of cost of living. If, in the meantime, the Department of Labor reports a living cost increase of 15% or less, the workers will absorb it. If it's more than that, then there will be raises equal to half the increase over 15%. That is, a 20% rise in cost of living would bring the workers a 2.5% raise July 1, 1950. The purpose of the agreement is to permit planning ahead on construction costs, at least so far as the big labor item goes. Next move is to arrange the same sort of agreement on cost of building materials. The New York plan is hailed here as a pattern for the country to encourage investment, ease the housing shortage, stabilize employment, and check inflation. Already, more cities, Springfield, Mass, and Cleveland are mentioned especially, and others, too, are considering similar plans. This is W.W. Chaplin, and that's what happened in New York today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Did you end the day with a headache? Alka-Seltzer can help you feel better fast, so try it. Since Alka-Seltzer is completely dissolved before you take it, the analgesic sodium acetyl salicylate's ready to go to work instantly. And because of its effervescent base, Alka-Seltzer gets there fast, gives fast relief.
When you buy vitamins, get the greatest value for your money. Listen.
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins.
Yes, penny for penny, one-a-day brand multiple vitamins give you more milligrams of vitamins than any other nationally known brand of multiple vitamins sold by your druggist. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which requirements have been established in human nutrition. Dependable for strength, purity, quality, and...
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Washington, labor lost 2 court decisions today and marked up a victory with 1 strategic decision. The Supreme Court handed down the 2 decisions against labor. The High Court refused to permit policemen to join a labor union in St. Louis and upheld an injunction against picketing and boycotting in a delicatessen. And here's the strategic legal victory for labor. A federal district court held the Taft-Hartley law ban on union funds for political purposes is contrary to the Constitution. It violates the freedom of speech, the press, and the rights of assembly. The government will appeal to the Supreme Court to get a final ruling. Chicago. President Truman intervened today in the threatened midnight strike of CIO meatpacking house workers. He asked the packers and the CIO to continue negotiations beyond the midnight strike deadline, and he set up a special board of inquiry for the negotiators. If the president's request is heeded, the new deadline for decision would be April 1. Incidentally, Chicago NBC reporter Jim Hurlbut just telephoned us that neither the strike leaders nor the packing houses are certain yet whether they will accept the president's plan. Washington. President Truman ordered government agencies today to refuse to let Congress or the courts see the loyalty files of federal employees. San Jose, Costa Rica, revolutionists have all but paralyzed Costa Rica in a drive on the Capitol. And that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow at this same time, this is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.